The UK Investor Magazine podcast is brought to you in association with Oanda, the broker of choice for traders who want a smarter way to trade. Trade with Oanda and get 1 year's subscription to TradingView Pro. 76.6% of retail investor accounts lose money when trading CFDs with this provider. You should consider whether you understand how CFDs work and whether you can afford to take the high risk of losing your money.
Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
For today's podcast, we're going to be hosting a Q&A session with the Cadence Minerals CEO, Kieran Morzaria. Kieran, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks as always.
Kieran presented with us at a UK Investor Magazine virtual conference about a month ago. Now, we had a lot of questions in from investors that we weren't able to field to Kieran during that event. So we're going to be delivering some of those questions to Kieran today. And there are also some questions that have come in since. So we're going to be looking at addressing those. So without further ado, we're going to get into it. It's going to be a very straightforward Q&A session. So the first question that comes in is a question that relates to Evergreen, of course, the lithium asset in Australia. Evergreen has listed. How did it all go?
Well, the listing has gone really well. According to the management, which we spoke to just after listing, they were saying it was one of the most successful listings on the ASX exchange this year. As shareholders, we're really extremely happy with the performance. It's about up 80% in this week or in the week since it started traded. And our return, because we invested much earlier, is sort of 370%. And that is adding about 3 million to our pretty substantial portfolio value of 40 million. So we've got about a 43 million portfolio value. So overall our assets. So it's great. It's part and parcel of what our strategy was to achieve with Evergreen. And of course, Hastings, we did something similar last year or this year rather.
Another question here, again on Evergreen, Kieran. It's more about, you know, what's going to be happening next. What are their plans post-listing?
Yeah, so obviously you can read the prospectus. And obviously we had spoken to management, we understood those plans. And they've helpfully released a presentation, which is available on their website. And we'll be updating our website to reflect some of these aspects. But in essence, Evergreen has three assets that it's progressing on. And you can see from the prospectus what they're planning to do, what doing, and they've helpfully released a pretty informative little presentation, which really shows their strategy over the next 4 to 5 months. So they've got three projects, the Binome, Fortune and Kenny. Their flagship project is in the Binome project, which is in Northern Australia, in a Butts Core Lithium, which is about capitalized about 2 billion. And they're real, you know, between them, you know, us vending the project to them and them listing, they raised capital and then they've done, they did an assay program in 2022. They did a ambient noise tomography survey also in 2022. And then now we expect to see the results from that. And ambient noise tomography is not new, but it's new in the exploration of lithium and those geophysics, those pegmatites that don't expose at surface. Sometimes it's hard to understand the geomorphology below it. So ambient noise tomography is a good way to understand vertical structures, and in particular these pegmatites that have got that are buried. And so we really look forward to see some 3D imaging from that. Then they're going to carry on doing further geochem and mapping, and probably do another an ANT or a ambient noise tomography survey. And that's going to be their focus for the next 4 or 5 months in Binome. The reason they're not drilling immediately, although they have drill targets, it's seasonal up there. So you can only drill certain times of the year. And so that's one of the reasons. And they also have to get local land or indigenous people's permission to drill as well. So they need to do that. But what they also have is the Kenny Lithium project, which is already carried out some auger drilling. It's in a well-known lithium province. And so we should get the assay and interp of the auger program. And then hopefully they start their maiden drill program on that asset. So they have the ability to be drilling on one, still carrying out some remote sensing, early exploration targets there. So it's that's what they're post doing. But of course, eventually they want to develop hopefully a world-class deposit at the mine by known or Kenny areas.
Fantastic. So we've got another question here on Evergreen, and it relates to the close proximity to Core Lithium's Finniss project. Now, this Finniss project has just increased the mineral resource estimate by 62% to some 30 million tonnes. It started shipping earlier this year. So the question is, how similar are Evergreen's assets to Core Lithium's Finniss mineralisation?
Yeah, so this was asked as well last time, but I wanted to expand a bit more because really sometimes it's hard to explain sort of early exploration geology and how that can relate to an eventual discovery of a deposit and, of course, hopefully eventually production. So firstly, in real basic, what we're targeting here are pegmatites, which are, volcanic or igneous type rocks, and they host some lithium mineral called spodumene. And so eventually the project is a spodumene project that gets shipped off to China and converted into lithium compounds. Now, the binone pegmatite field hosts the Finniss lithium deposit, which, as you said, was about 30 million tons. And it's like, it's one of the newest producers and, could argue it's a world-class deposit. So the binone pegmatite field hosts the Finniss lithium deposit, and the tenure of Evergreen Lithium covers part of the binone pegmatite field. Hence, they've named it the Binone Lithium Project. So it's in the right area. It's in the right geological environment. The mapping has shown quartz blows, which are a surface expression of quartz at surfaces. Imagine an igneous extrusion and a blow of quartz is exposed at surface. That's exactly the same type of surface expression that you see on Finniss and other of those deposits in core. The pegmatite trend, which way they strike or they're orientate, is a northeast-southwest trend, which is similar to those that you see on core assets. And the geochem samples that are being done in 2021, which we saw, and 2022, which we still have to see the results for, so we don't know about that, but 2021 confirmed the same mineral signature at the surface that we had in core lithium. So if we look at it, it's in the right geological environment, it's got one of the right surface expressions of a pegmatite, it's orientated in the same way as the core lithium assets are, and it also has the geochemical signatures that were exhibited in core lithium. So if you take that, so that's a really strong indication and certainly has identified some drill targets. Tomography will finalize that, but the geology is the same environment and it's looking very similar. Drilling will eventually determine the size and nature, but Evergreen have believed that there's a possibility of another world-class deposit here at Binome.
Thank you. So moving on now from Evergreen, but staying within lithium, there's a question here about the reduction in the price of lithium. Now, anybody following the lithium market would be well aware what's happened to the price over the last 6 months to a year. But it'd be good to get your view, Kieran, on why this has happened. And the question specifically asks, is this a reflection of oversupply in the markets?
Well, in the short term, as you've just mentioned, we've seen a drop of lithium compound pricing. So these are the final products that go a precursor to making batteries, which is lithium hydroxide and lithium carbonate at 99%+. And that's dropped 50% to 60% depending on what benchmarks you use and or service providers. But however, you've got to remember that these lithium products are not commodities like copper and tin. There's not a openly transparent market. So we always, like you would have in the open crime markets and the LME, you don't have that transparency because you can't transfer ownership that way, because lithium carbonate, lithium hydroxide have qualities that as a vendor, you're giving a guarantee to a seller. So there's no real middlemen, as it were, in this to do trading of lots and stuff like that. So there's no transparent market. So you always have to review that pricing data in context of other data points. And so what we can see, and what we can see in transactional pricing for spodumene, which is the precursor to the lithium concentrate, the lithium hydroxide, shipped from Australia, we did see a small drop in pricing, but nothing to the level of the drop that we saw in the compounds. So given the input costs of the Chinese smelters buying in this product, when we have a known idea of the processing cost to convert the spodumene into lithium compounds, it basically suggests that the Chinese converters are running at a loss or break even. So there is a pricing mismatch in the short term. And Bloomberg basically came out this morning saying, actually, you know, there seems to be an undersupply of lithium carbonate, lithium hydroxide, and therefore we will see a recovery. Now that's in the short term, which is important to our short-term portfolio valuation. But ultimately, we want to say, what is the long term for these assets? Well, I think we've always talked, of course, we know where this is. The majority of the demand that we see that's clear is in the EV sector. And, you know, you keep on seeing news flow that suggests more penetration in the EV sector. So long term, so for example, the EPA in the USA, the EPA in the USA came out with significant changes to the emission regs, which Benchmark Minerals estimate that there'll be a further 78% requirement in terms of batteries in their forecast for 2032, which of course means a demand on battery metals. You've got to imagine how quickly it's been growing. Since 2018 to 2023, there's been a 500% increase in the amount of battery capacity. So we're seeing the demand drivers, but are we seeing the supply and the investment of supply? And our frank answer has always been no and continues to be no, because various people talk about what they need in terms of investment. We're talking, you know, Benchmark estimates about $2.5 trillion of investment in the mining sector to feed the demand. And it's not happening. And therefore, it will continue to be constrained. And therefore, our view has been that, you know, EV penetration will plateau 20, 30% by 25, 27, unless we invest now and fast. You've got to remember that we have 10 years, you know, roughly from discovery to production. So it's the demand is there. We're not investing enough in supply. So I can't see how we're going to see a continuing lithium price at this level, because there fundamentally is not enough product coming onto the market. And they're becoming harder to find, because over the last 10 years of exploration, we've discovered new deposits, and there's been further exploration. So a lot of the low-hanging fruit have been discovered in the safe jurisdiction. So you're now having to go into different jurisdictions that are harder to discover, more expensive, and maybe in areas that have got less good land tenure and so on and so forth, or rule of law. Yes, so that's my opinion. So fundamentally, not enough supply, plenty of demand, and not enough investment to feed that demand. So continued high lithium prices.
Thank you. So we're going to try and add a little bit more context to that opinion now with the next question from a shareholder, Kieran, which, you know, given what you've just said there, is quite a good question. They ask, are you looking for additional investments in lithium? What would be the criteria in the current market? And, you know, where could these investments particularly be?
So our strategy is an investment company. And so we will always review, and we continue to review lithium input. Primary at the moment, lithium investments, and there are other ones that we continue to review. And, you know, at the moment, we're sort of not investing at this point in time. But if we do find something that has, as you talk about, the criteria, in simple, as one of the things, I would look for a good, transparent jurisdiction with established tenure and good laws, rules of law. I would look for hard rock pegmatites, not because they're necessarily a better producer, but they're easier to market, they're quicker to market, there's an established processing route, and there's enough of pricing incentive to develop these assets at the moment. And I would then, so when I look at that and I take those two, I quite like South America, quite like Brazil, you know, given that Sigma Lithium, it's got the right geology, it's a stable cryptonic environment, so it has similar geology that you might see in Australia. So, and with lots of you know, granite intrusions and then the associated pegmatites, big pegmatite fields there. And we're seeing something like Sigma Lithium becoming one of the first spodumene producers out of Brazil. And of course, price. That's the other one, of course. You know, there's no point in having all of those things and someone's already priced in, you know, effectively a huge premium. So sometimes you might have to take some additional risk since for that.
Great. So we have another question here, which, you know, when you're in markets, there's always two sides to a market and two views. And this one really looks at potential replacement technology. So it'd be good to get your view around this question here, which asks about how you feel about potential replacement technologies such as hydrogen fuel cells.
Yeah, so hydrogen fuel cells are interesting. And I think I always look at it from the bottom up. So what are hydrogen fuel cells? What does it need? So ultimately, a hydrogen fuel cell is driven off water to produce the hydrogen, right? It's an electrolysis process, which is energy hungry, to take water and produce effectively hydrogen, which then gets burnt, and energy is then, for that burning of that energy, you know, transmits, moves the car forward. And also it's basically it's using a similar internal combustion engine to effectively, or it is used to charge batteries within the hydrogen car. Now, the problem with that is that, of course, you know, we're talking about climate change and the possibility of lower water levels in terms of fresh water. But there, so then what people say, we can just desalinate. But then you've got a desalination and then a hydrolysis in terms of producing the hydrogen, which is highly energy intensive and certainly more energy intensive, as I understand it, than mining lithium itself and that becomes a battery and storing the energy through the generation of electricity through something like solar power and so on and so forth. So that's what you're really comparing, is how do you create the energy? I don't see them as replacing. So it's one, I think it's more energy intensive. It's you're getting a depleting resource, which is effectively water and salt water. And also you have the issue of infrastructure of storing these hydrogen fuel, hydrogen in certain petrol stations and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of build out. That said, I can see them replacing or being part and parcel of the solution for long haulage trucks. So something like that, where you effectively have a hydrogen fuel cell charging batteries, is what they do anyway at the moment. And then those batteries still drive the vehicle. So smaller batteries in sort of vehicles that drive really long distances and have the space to. So sort of trucks across America, you know, across Europe. And so that's right. But for the EV vehicle, you know, for the sort of mum and pup driving kids to school and doing short distances in sort of Europe and the UK, I can't see a replacement for lithium ion batteries, full stop.
So there's a question here, and this is quite a broad one around the actual EV vehicle market. Of course, there's lots of changes that are going in. There's lots of new lines that are coming in. There's different technologies that's being developed. I mean, what do you feel from your point of view will be the impact of what you're seeing at the moment on the longer term forecast of how this market's going to play out? And of course, demand for lithium and, you know, potential replacements, you know, from a specific EV standpoint, how do you see that progressing in the coming years?
So I suppose the holy grail with EVs, because that's what they're really good for, is because they've got very low maintenance costs. They can drive, you know, hundreds of thousand kilometers with very low maintenance. So their cost of maintaining is sort of 10x lower than a sort of internal combustion engine. Is then utilizing sort of the AI aspect for self-driving vehicles. And that's a longer view. And I'm assuming that we've sorted out the lithium problem. We've sorted out all these other issues that go along there, and specifically things like supply of materials, manufacturing processes, and regulations in that. But I can see AI being the next catalyst to drive EV penetration to the levels of, you know, going towards that sort of magic 100% where, or 99% or 90%. And also, I can see a huge boost in economy. And this is not me saying this. There are several commentators that talk about this, because suddenly, why do you need a car that sits in your drive most of the time of the year with probably a 10 to 20% utilization rate, when you can order an AI, and which you're paying for on a lease basis or whatever, which you know costs you money, and that's money's capital just tied up, sort of depreciating on your doorstep, when you can have effectively artificial intelligence driven cars that take you locally around the place, take kids to school, and and are at a 90% utilization rate, where, and then you have less car parking, more availability of space for housing, you know, effectively, personally, you have a huge amount more income because you're not leasing one or two vehicles, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, that's the longer term, really long term view, if you want to push it out that far. I would not be teaching my younger daughter to drive. I still think, just because of regulation, I still think my younger daughter will still need to learn to drive. So I think it's in my lifetime, but probably at the tail end of it.
Yes. We've had a few people on from the AV, autonomous vehicle markets on recently, and they certainly shared that view, Kieran. So we obviously spoke about the lithium side of things, but we're going to move on to an area of your portfolio now, which we haven't touched on so far, which is the rare earth market. And of course, you have a number of investments within that area. But let's start again by looking at the bigger picture here and how the rare earth market has performed, and maybe some particular rare earth that has stood out for you.
So, we invested in the rare earth market, and they're not rare. They're just called rare earths because that's where they appear on the periodic table, on neodymium praseodymium, because those are the two rare earths that effectively are needed for the green and EV electric revolution. So we focused, and that's where our investment is in Hastings Technologies, where we had a concession that we had 30% off. We swapped out into equity into Hastings. But what we've also seen within that market, especially the pricing of the basket of neodymium and other elements in that, is we've also seen a drop in price off that over the last 3 or 4 months. So, you know, we've seen both the lithium pricing and the neodymium, praseodymium, and that basket of heavy, of rare earth metals that are used in new technologies, a drop off in the price. And that's, again, probably through this, whether that be a true pricing or it's sort of market speculation, and certainly some of that. We're not quite sure, but ultimately, if we, you know, the primary thesis that electric vehicles are going to penetrate, we don't have enough supply. Therefore, these products and these things like these rare earth metals and lithium will be in demand. So pricing should move northwards, and certainly shouldn't go much further south, given where we are. So I still, although it's performed not so well in the last 3 or 4 months, it's gone back to its level maybe in June last year. So it hasn't performed well. And that's really, I suppose, reflected in the performance of our investments as well there.
We did have a few questions around rare earths, and we've amalgamated them into one here. And it's really your assessment of your investments at the moment, given what you're seeing out there in the market and the price movement that you're seeing there. I mean, what's your general feeling around your portfolio holdings at the moment?
Well, as I just said, both the lithium pricing has come down in the short term, and we've explained just beforehand why we think that's incorrect in terms of lithium hydroxide, lithium carbonate, and we should see a rebound on that. And the same has happened in the rare earths, those basket of metals that we just talked about, those rare earths that are used in the EV sector and permanent magnets. So as a result of that, I think we're also seeing a reflection in our portfolio, because ultimately changes in rare earths changes in lithium pricing in the short term has a short term impact on NPV of the projects, even though they're not in construct, not being, there are some of them, one of which is in construction, but even though they're not in production, that we see a drop in value. And that's what we've seen with both Hastings Technologies and European Metals Holdings. which and some of our smaller public companies that we hold, their price has gone down. But ultimately, the thesis still remains the same, that in order to get the penetration and the government mandated emission targets in the US, for example, we need more raw materials. I reiterate Benchmark's estimate, $2.5 trillion worth of investment in the mining sector to achieve these targets. So ultimately, you've got state mandated requirements, whether it be EU, United Kingdom, the US, one of the biggest consumers of the single country of vehicles. You know, that sort of demand is going to come from the supply of these materials. So even though in the short term we're seeing some pricing variation, I view and still, and I've seen this in 2018 and 2017, lo and behold, you know, everyone realizes they still haven't invested enough money in this sector and prices go up. So it doesn't make me necessarily want to exit these investments. But, you know, once we've made our return or a good return, we need to now look how to exit to some of the invest to reinvest to make the same level of return again. We've got a good set of investments and I certainly see upside for them.
That's fascinating. Thank you, Kieran. So we've got one final question here that's come in from a investor or potential investor. And this is a question that I do ask mining investment companies or potentially project generating companies, you know, that are out there at the exploration phase. But the question is, you know, is it conceivable that Cadence could evolve from a mining investment company into an owner-operator of its assets?
Yeah, and it's a valid question. And I suppose the answer always comes down to, do the shareholders get better value by either us becoming an operator or us spinning out one of our assets and that becomes operated? And that is ultimately the question. Why are you going to embark on a fairly complex process to do a reverse or a spin out, bring on new management, go through the risks of becoming an operator, which is still, you know, those external risks are quite substantial sometimes. Is it worth it? So, you know, we especially, you know, when someone looks at our market cap right at the moment, even on the bare bones, you know, market cap 17 million, a portfolio value given the last price we paid for a mapper at $1 million a percentage point, you know, you're talking 40 million, 43 million pounds on that basis, not accounting for any NPVs or anything like that. You know, you go, well, there is a disparity. So is there, you know, is there, for example, an idea to get a mapper as a separate listed entity? And this therefore could increase Cadence's market value by it having the reflection of the performance of its shares. So, you know, at the moment, we're continuing our investment strategy. But it's not to say that we would ever preclude, and given the right market valuation, if someone said, right, look, a mapper's worth this, we think you're going to list this. How does that make, does that increase our value to what we expect? We would, of course, consider it. But our strategy is at the time, our strategy for a mapper at the moment is to progress those three studies that we talked about in our RNSs, which could hopefully improve our CapEx, reduce our OpEx, increase our revenue by increasing the product quality and increase the mine life. And at the same time, you know, look to get a joint venture partner into our asset and our mapper with the right expertise, the right background, maybe even a funding partner who funded larger projects and debt financed to bring them in and develop that asset that way. Because certainly at this market capitalization, to raise money for a DFS, which, you know, DFSs are not cheap, you know, they're $7 to $10 million. We can achieve a better valuation at our mapper. So that's our strategy. I didn't want to answer it specifically, but of course it's always conceivable that you can become an owner operator, but it really has to deliver value to shareholders. And that's ultimately the answer.
That's fascinating, Kieran. Thank you. Thank you very much. Some really good answers there to some quite good questions, actually, that came in. Unfortunately, we didn't get to ask some of those on the last event, but thank you very much for joining us today and addressing those. So, Kieran, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome, as always.
This podcast was presented by Oanda, Trading View's most popular broker. Trade with Oanda and get 1 year subscription to Trading View Pro. 76.6% of retail investor accounts lose money when trading CFDs with this provider. You should consider whether you understand how CFDs work and whether you can afford to take the high risk of losing your money.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.